Oh, boy. This hole that the basketball program's in is bigger than I anticipated it was going to be this year. Bigger than I anticipated it getting, certainly bigger than I anticipated it getting 7 games into the conference schedule. K-State got waxed last night, man. Flat out waxed by Oklahoma. I think that's as bad a performance as K-State has had all season outside of Fort Hays State. And man, is the program equipped right now to pull itself out of this hole? No matter how it got there, is the program right now, as it's currently constituted, capable of pulling itself out of this hole? Is Bruce Weber capable of pulling the program out of where it's at right now? Because the doubts are more than creeping for me right now. They really are. I did not like what I saw in a lot of different ways last night. You can tweet me at J.O. Kurtz. You can tweet the show at the game KMAN. I did find a way to watch the game last night, which I don't know whether or not that was good or bad. Frankly, if you're somebody that's a really big supporter of the program, Bruce Weber supporter right now, it probably would have been better for your sake, if you're about to listen to this, had I not seen the game last night. But in between hearing Selton Miguel called Miguel Selton and, hearing Casey Iziagu and what was the other? There was one other name that was consistently mispronounced throughout the course of the game. I digress. The broadcast was frustrating. The game was frustrating. The season, I would say, is frustrating, but is it frustrating at this point? I mean, it's just apathy. It's a chore to watch the team. I mean, it is a chore to watch this team play basketball again, and that's how it felt all of last season, slumming through a 3-win Big 12 season, and now this year, find me the two other wins right now. It's hard to see this going much better, and I just wonder if the hole has been dug too far. That's the analogy that I have been choosing to use today. Has COVID taken a shovel and helped dig? Yes. I do think that's the case. Not being able to have the foreign trip that this team was supposed to go on in the offseason. Not being able to have as much practice time. Bruce has said, hey, there are only like 6 or 7 practices the entire year where we've had a full complement of players. I get that. I understand it. I think COVID has helped dig some of that hole. Have injuries helped dig some of that hole? Sure. Of course they have. Casey Iziagu came back last night. He missed a good portion of time. Montavious Murphy, season-ending knee surgery. Like, injuries have certainly not helped. But at the end of the day, if the program is going to get back to where we want it to be and being legitimately competitive, you have to pull yourself out of the hole that's been dug. It doesn't matter how you got down in said hole. It doesn't matter who was carrying the shovels. You have to be asking yourself tough questions at the end of the day, which start with, can we get out of this? And my concern right now is that you're slipping too far. Because the cold hard facts are pretty damning. This team has lost Big 12 games so far this year by an average of 18 points per game. I mean, these are not competitive games. Oklahoma is not Baylor. Losing to Baylor by 31... you don't love to see that, but Baylor is one of the two best teams in the country. Oklahoma didn't get a single vote in the top 25 last week. Not even Jesse Newell, who's trying to single-handedly keep every team down in, like the 40s in the typical poll, the way the typical pollsters vote, in the top 25 with how he votes. Oklahoma didn't get a single vote in the top 25. And you lose the game by 26. Right now, if it were to end today, this two-season stretch from Bruce Weber the last 2 years would be the worst win percentage over a two-year stretch since the 40s at K-State. That's courtesy of KSU_fan. Shout out to him. good follow right now. A guy who's been a Bruce supporter, a guy who has been, I mean, just super rational as a fan and pseudo-media member. He's just putting out the facts. The worst two-year stretch win percentage-wise right now that K-State has had since the 40s. Worse than Tom Asbury. Worse than Jim Wooldridge. Worse than Jim Wooldridge's first 2 years. I did see that on the list. Not as bad as what K-State is going through right now. It's one thing to say, hey, the program has come back from this before, after the 14-15 blow-up. But it's another to realize and look at those numbers and see that that stretch, 14-15 and 15-16, K-State won 49% of their games over that two-year stretch. Right now, K-State has won 34% of their games over this two-year stretch. Like the 14-15 team still won 8 games in the league. Barry Dean and Cam's freshman year, they won 5 games in the league and had 2 double overtime losses and a bunch of really close losses. This team's not competitive now, right now, man. I mean, they just are not capable of being competitive. And I know Nigel Pack is still out. Oklahoma was missing Brady Manick for most of the game. He played 11 minutes. He clearly wasn't himself. Texas was missing 2 frontline players who may be going to the NBA. I mean, even Wyatt pointed that out. I have serious doubts right now about the ability to pull the program out of the hole that it's in, COVID or otherwise, however the hell it got there. You have to be able to pull yourself back out, and I don't know that the juice is there for that.
I didn't watch last night's game. I can't really grade K-State on that, but Bruce Weber said it after the game about just, you know, bringing up repetitive mistakes. Like, he mentioned to Wyatt and Stan after the game that, you know, it's happening again. It's game after game where, you know, K-State is in it early, and then the opponent will go on a long run, ending the first half. And in this case, it was a 27-4 run for Oklahoma, which they used the press. K-State was just turning it over a ton, and they used that run to end the first half and carry that momentum into the second half. They're digging themselves into such a great hole, use that analogy as well, they can't climb out of it. It is way too deep just in a singular game. Now, Nigel Pack is a freshman, and we have seen how much K-State has struggled without him on the floor because he's making shots. That's a huge issue with this team. As yes, they're doing some nice things. They play some nice defense once in a while, but the consistent thing is the shooting is bad. 24 points now in back-to-back games in the first half. We were talking earlier in the year, K-State was having strong first halves, but they weren't putting it together in the second half. There was no consistency. Now it's complete games. We're not seeing consistency. As a matter of fact, I would say K-State maybe even a little bit has been better in the second half. It's kind of a reverse effect. But the hole has been coming earlier and earlier now in these Big 12 games. And when getting these players back from injury, because let's look at it this way, it's not so much COVID, it's injuries once again. The normal wear and tear in a season is affecting K-State again. They're getting these players back, and it feels like they're getting worse.
It does. It does. It feels like things are getting worse. I mean, looking back on the Texas Tech game right now, it feels like we threw them sort of a parade for being competitive with Texas Tech, which is Tech's a good team. That was a decent performance. If all the performances were like that, if that were the general rule, I suppose that would be one thing. Even then, it was still an 11-point loss. And instead, you're getting more of the Texas, Oklahoma, and Baylor kind of performances out of this team, just showing, I get they're young, I get they're hurt, I get the COVID. Just show how damn far away they are right now. Man, I mean, it's just hard once you get into this level of really futility for 2 years. I mean, it's hard to pull back out of that. Even if COVID is a part of it and some of the circumstances haven't helped, like guys going through 2 years in the program with that many losses piling up and fan negativity, which you know is going to happen and continue to come because more losses are on the schedule. Breaking news. More losses are going to be on the schedule. Like, it's tough to pull yourself out of that as players. There are no, I mean, Barry Brown, Dean Wade, and Kamau Stokes came in with DJ Johnson and Wesley Owundu, who had played on teams that had won. What are you going to have next year in terms of guys that have been on teams that have won? I mean, Mike McGurl is it right now, and Mike McGurl is the one that Bruce Weber is saying after the game is letting the pressure really get to him and has been taking it too hard, too much on himself since Nigel Pack went out of the lineup. There's just, I don't know, man. I'm not real thrilled about what the recruiting class looks like already for next year, so it doesn't feel like there are these great reinforcements coming in next season. There's a lot of basketball left to play out the rest of the year, but I'm not seeing it right now. There will be a lot that has to be proven to me for me to feel good about where this is going by the end of the season. I'll put it that way. And I think pretty much everybody is there after that. I don't know if it works for or against Bruce Weber that the last two games have been on Longhorn Network and then Fox Sports Kansas City. And, you know, if a basketball game falls in the forest and nobody was there to see it, did a basketball game happen? I don't know if that helps or hurts, because there is also this element of, like, just adds to the apathy that's being felt right now. At JL Kurtz at the game, KMAN, if you want to weigh in on this, we're going to play you some audio from Bruce Weber, a couple of quotes that I found frustrating after the game last night. And the My Guy curse has, for real this time, absolutely claimed another victim. We need to get to that next on the game. Well, now, Mitch, you're going to force me to go to my Twitter likes to read you the best tweet that I've seen in a long time. Some guy named Drew Garland, content producer at the New England Sports Network. Wow, big day for that guy. He went viral with this tweet. Said, "I can't believe Mike Pence has seen Gaga live and I haven't."
That's a good one. It doesn't sound like much, but it's pretty funny.
Oh, it's really funny. Like, Mike Pence, repressed Mike Pence, has seen Lady Gaga, one of the more flamboyant performers of a generation, perform live now. I haven't. That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. Not a lot of good stuff to talk about on the sports front around Manhattan, Kansas these days. Although we do have Mitch Holtis coming up later. Here's a quote from Bruce Weber last night after the loss. I took this to feel a lot like when he said last year it feels like Groundhog's Day all over again.
Obviously, we got our butts kicked again. It's the same scenario every game. You know, we're in the game. We make a nice run. We're up 22-17. And then right before the half, we do not make the right plays.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a lot more than right before the half. The run, as Mitch told you earlier, extended to 27-4 when it was 15-2 to end that first half. There was also a quote from Bruce that I don't have the audio of handy right now, but he said, we don't have anybody to just go get a basket, and that's a big problem. And, I mean, when you score 50 points against Oklahoma, a decent enough defensive team, but certainly not Baylor, then you really have some problems. And I like those are the kinds of things. I'm not nitpicking the fact that Bruce Weber said that. It's the fact that that is such a true statement right now that is the frustrating part about where the basketball program is at. There's not somebody to go get a basket right now. And even if Nigel Pack were in the lineup, Nigel Pack is not somebody that really goes and gets his own shot. He needs to be set up. Now, it helps to have his shooting there. There's no doubt about that. But they don't have anybody to just give the ball to and go get them a basket. And it's always been the problem of the Bruce era, right? It's always offense that really seems to be lacking. And so it makes sense. It stands to reason that when they're just worse overall than they've been at any point in the Bruce Weber era, they're going to struggle offensively, but you have to recruit somebody who can go get you a basket. There's been 3 years now to recruit a bucket getter, and they don't appear to have a real bucket getter on the roster. And you just, with three straight recruiting classes, not landing somebody like that, and then this year leaving an open scholarship, which is something we haven't talked about a ton, but leaving an open scholarship, not taking a chance on somebody, a grad transfer. I mean, just go find the best bucket getting grad transfer that you can, defense be damned, and have them hold down that last roster spot that you have. There were options that were still there that weren't taken advantage of, and that's come back to bite this team now in a COVID year where you knew that roster availability would likely be an issue. And it has, although injuries have been the bigger culprit than COVID. So it's just, you know, you go down this whole line of frustrations and picking apart how exactly you got here, but when the end result is you're having to say, hey, we only scored 50 points at Oklahoma, middle-of-the-road defensive team in the Big 12, middle-of-the-road team, period, in the Big 12, and lost by 26 because we don't have anybody that can go get a bucket. Well, I mean, I don't blame people for not being happy upon hearing that. Not because the quote is a problem, but because the reality is a problem. I don't know if this is any better to transition to, but I was alerted to some issues with the My Guy curse. So Donovan Williams, my guy, we just talked about him not long ago when Oklahoma State rolled in here. He did not play. He has barely played at all this year for Oklahoma State. Under 20 minutes of action his entire freshman season, and now that season is done. Because it is being reported that Donovan Williams has a season-ending injury. So, it appears that the curse has powers beyond the reach of merely Manhattan, Kansas. So, Donovan, I apologize to you, my friend. Sometimes I cannot control this. It appears that I was incorrect in stating that Briley Moore totally lifted the curse. I think he was an exception to the rule of the curse because of the season that he had, and I will still go to my grave believing that. But it is clear that that did not put an end to it.
Go back a couple of weeks ago when Oklahoma State visited Manhattan. That was the game where K-State had six scholarship players available. Well, Oklahoma State was a bit shorthanded as well. They weren't as bad as K-State, but I think they had nine available, but they had eight of their nine top scorers. Well, Donovan Williams was there. He is not one of Oklahoma State's top eight of nine scorers, but he was there, but he did not play. He was the only one there for Oklahoma State as a player that was not dressed to play. He was in sweats the entire time, but K-State fans, they still knew who he was. There were hecklers behind me saying, Donovan, you know, you're getting after Donovan Williams. But yes, your curse, and I think this is proof right here that, you know, I'm not a big believer in curses, but this is certainly one. I'm becoming a believer now because Donovan Williams, even though he never signed the dotted line to become a Wildcat, he's been in Manhattan once, and he is now cursed for life. And until you find a way to lift curses, which I don't know if you have one or not, that's up to you to figure that out.
I mean, how am I supposed to do that?
You got to start mixing with the potions. Become the mad scientist. Start mixing and matching. See what doesn't blow up in your face. And because you have cursed this young man. This is really the first example of somebody that, first of all, hasn't ever been here as a player, but has played somewhere else and has got hurt. Because I can't think of any others that have departed K-State and then went somewhere else but wasn't really able to play because they were injured.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is unique, even for the curse itself, through its long-storied history now. I feel like what I'm realizing is that I just have to be more careful. I'm going to have to be more careful, because this still does have more power than I flippantly gave it credit for when I did play the celebration music and anoint Donovan Williams as my guy this summer. You know, little did Donovan Williams know that the way that he, I'll just say it, screwed over K-State with the commitment and then the backing out of it thing and picking Oklahoma State, that came back to bite him. It did, because it His brief commitment was enough to get me all excited.
I remember talking about that, and your argument was, well, you know, this is just what kids do these days. They'll commit somewhere and then back out. You know, this is just part of basketball. And I didn't want to hear that at all. But you went the full distance in making him my guy before that. And it was your way to back out of it. It was a backpedal.
I still think that that is accurate, everything you just quoted me on.
You made it sound okay, though.
Well, I don't have as big a problem with it as I think a lot of people. Mitch, nothing I said here was criticizing the fact that he did that. I'm merely pointing out that him doing that got me excited, which therefore laid the curse on him. And now, I don't know, he's going to have to go roll around in some garlic or something to get this thing out. Is that how you do it? Garlic?
JK47 might have to step in and write a rap about him or something.
What does that have to do with
it? You know, it's like your own little spell lifter, I suppose. Your spell is just anointing somebody, hashtag my guy, and throwing a big party for it when it should be a funeral.
Well, that's why we have this bed music now, because this does feel very dark and ominous.
And poor Donovan, because if he was here, he probably plays a little bit more. He's not playing a minute a game and not scoring.
Yes, but also, if he were here, there would just be another person on the list of injury / COVID that's going into the media guide or the media notes and then therefore to the TV broadcast. So we'd just be hearing about another dude that's hurt. We would.
Well, it's clockwork.
All right. Is Patrick Mahomes going to play? Let's hope that there are no curses on him. We'll ask Mitch Holtis that question next. Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs, here with us on the game. Appreciate the time as always, Mitch. In your heart of hearts, when the Chiefs are lined up on 4th-and-1, did you really think that a play was about to be run and that the Chiefs would be going for it?
Well, you can listen to the play-by-play and kind of hear it in my voice, and it's my answer is about 30%, you know, he may run this. That's just how sneaky he is, meaning Coach Reed. But about 70% was, I'll probably take it down. And I even say they can take this down to 112 or 1. I gave the game clock. And I said, hey, they can take this down to about 112, thinking, okay, they might. And 3/4 of me was thinking, but I'm going, man, I've been with Andy Reid 8 years. I'm ready for anything. And whammo, there was anything. So it's just so brilliant, though, in his – there's so much into that play that tells you about Andy Reid and just how thorough he is. When I'm doing training camp reports with you guys, and everybody thinks it's like, spring training baseball, like we're stretching and fielding burns and stuff. It's not that way with Coach Reid. Every day could have massive importance on the season. That's what I've learned. Seems weird, but there'll be something in St. Joe or something in an OTA or minicamp, even in the summer, that he's working on that day that you see manifested in the season. And this was one of those examples. The fact that he basically ran something very similar earlier, it might even have been the play where Tyreek catches against his knee, but Tyreek was lined up and trips as the outside guy, meaning the defense is counting him as one. You count left to right, that's the one receiver. And then this play, they had him lined up as the three, which is the inside receiver just outside the tackle, and that means he was lined up. They didn't match on him, so he got lined up on the worst cover guy the Browns had, who got totally deked on that quick twitch move that Tyreek made. And the other thing that pertains to you, guess who the tight end was protecting the backside on that play? Have you gone back and looked at it?
That's a good question. I have not. Yeah. Is this going to be Pringle?
Yep, Pringle. He lines up a tight end more than any of us realize, and I don't even know it because I'm not watching. I'm thinking, okay, it's closed, but I don't see. Gosh, that I'm taking time to go. That's Nick. No, that's not. That's Pringle at tight end. He's lined up a tight end more than you think because he's such a reliable blocker, and they wanted him to protect the backside of Henny in case somebody was coming screaming off that back edge and screwed up the play from a timing standpoint.
Man, that is all fascinating. I love that, the dichotomy of a play and everything that goes into it. And I just love, too, I don't know, there's something to be said about all the criticism that Andy Reid has taken over the years for clock management and wilting and those sorts of situations, when really I think a lot more of it is just, hey, now he's got Patrick Mahomes, this quarterback that, you know, paired with his coaching ability makes him look much different. But the fact that it was like throwing it in the face of all the criticism that have been levied his way over the years to me made me love it even more.
This is nothing against Carl Straw or, let's see, Jason Smargesso or Matt Garber or even Chad May. But when Coach Snyder was able to get the Michael Bishops and L. Robersons of the world, it took all the genius that was Coach Snyder and made him all the more so. So there's a lot of people that cover the National Football League. It's covered worldwide. But those Northeast folks covering him pigeonholed Andy Reid into something that he really wasn't. And when you study those games, you're like, no, I mean, time management, I could sit there and argue these things. Then you're right. He finally gets a quarterback, and it's like, wow, he just became smart all of a sudden. And what happened to dumb Andy Reid? Well, Andy is so thorough. Coach is so thorough in his approach, just like that instance. So he's thinking, okay, we're going to run this fourth down play, but we're going to run that one formation where Tyreek's the three and not the one, because Cleveland is out of timeouts, John. So they can't, even it's on their sideline, they're seeing, oh, it's D-Rob is the one and Kelsey's the two. The other brilliant thing about that play, if I wanted to break it down, was D-Will, Darrell Williams was the running back. Well, many times the running back will line up wide in a five wide and then come jogging back in, right? You see it so many times, I'll call it on the air. He jogs back in then to the side where he had lined up initially. On this one, another Reed brilliance, he lines up and comes trotting in, not to the left side, but he comes around to the right side. Now they've flooded it with four guys. And what happened was Goodson, the linebacker, 93, who was having a rough day anyway, and had just given up the third and four play to D. Will. He kind of blew coverage and, oh, crap, I'm there too late. And then he tries to chase him down. Hey, first down. Chiefs can burn off another 90 seconds off the clock. So his head's spinning anyway, plus it forced Cleveland to burn a timeout. And so now he's thinking, all right, my guy's over here wide. Don't screw this up if they throw to him. Now they shift him over. So now Goodson moves over. He's going to come all the way over, and they're counting dudes. And this is the four. Then, boom, quick snap. And so Tyreek just destroys his guy, 36, and runs his quick twitch move. But even 36 is influenced because 96 kind of in his way, because he's worried about Darrell Williams. And it was just, it was awesome. The play that they put out there, that it looked like something else, but was something entirely different in where they put the personnel.
Mitch Holtis talking with us here on The Game. How many times this week, if you had to guesstimate, have you been asked about Patrick Mahomes' health and where he's at?
K-State. I think that's about right. 1,863 times. So
okay, yeah.
It's and it's only Wednesday, so we'll close in with 2K here pretty soon.
I did see that he participated in practice, right? What is the general feeling surrounding that right now?
Okay, so glad you asked. And this is not some PR laced answer. This is as close to the truth as I can give you, because it's the truth. And Mitch was asking about it. I don't know, did Coach say, I didn't see or hear, have his soundbite that Pat took all of the snaps. It's just this day of practice. Coach changes Wednesday practices as the season goes later in the year to keep these guys fresh. Thursday is probably a more important day to ask that question. But let's just back up here a second, because we're not even sure whether Patrick Mahomes has been diagnosed with a concussion, right? Let's just back up the truck a second. Because when he showed the instability getting up, like motor instability, we all saw it, we've seen it 1,000 times now, getting up or he's struggling. When that instability could be caused by a neurological issue, then they come out of the game. That's why the guy's up top's going buzzing him out. And then an independent neurologist has to look at him. This isn't the Chiefs guy or Weird Wolf or some fan going, yep, he's good, put him back in. The league changed this, I believe, after the 2017 season. And it's been awesome because concussions have dropped dramatically in the NFL. But I think even more so, I don't have the empirical data here, but what you want to prevent, John, and you know this, is to prevent a reoccurring concussion. If there's a first concussion, a quick second concussion. That's when it gets, you know, devastating, I think. All right, so an independent neurologist goes, no go, no go, can't return to the game. That doesn't mean he has a concussion. That means he's not going back into the game, and we're going to evaluate him and put him in the concussion protocol. All right, now, you start the gateway then to the concussion protocol. There are no shortcuts when you enter the protocol. None. It's a five-stage process. Monday was basically looking, he did some minor stretching, light aerobic exercise. It's what every coach does, whether they're playing soccer or football or basketball, whatever, when they try to, or a trainer is evaluating, is this person concussed? And then later, fall on their eyes. Does the bright light bother them? Do they have trouble sleeping? Are they nauseous? All that stuff. All right, that's stage one. Stage two is basically yesterday. So the beginning of some cardiovascular exercise and some dynamic stretching. Today was basically stage three, and that is a limited amount of football-specific exercise, including some practice time that's supervised by a trainer. That's stage three. Now, Andy Reid's quote that I did see here, and I Mitch said taking all the snaps, was that to be confirmed? I do know this. Coach Reid said it was a limited practice. It fit right in with what he could do, so he took all the snaps. It feels good. All right, there you go. But the point is, don't take that to mean, all right, well, he's great. He took all the snaps. Because Wednesday practice is much different than a Thursday practice. And then the next stage is being evaluated by a team doctor and this is the big one, an independent neurological consultant, or they call him the INC. And if that person does not check off, he won't play. So all of those steps have to be, the boxes have to be checked. There's no quick, hey, let's all put it on Monday and getting cleared by Tuesday. Does not happen. NFL put in the system in 2018, and it's been really, really good for this league.
Well, Mahomes or not, it's going to be a tough challenge with the Bills and the way Josh Allen is playing right now. What's your read on where this Bills team is at and what the keys will be?
A ton of similarities between the Bills and Chiefs, a lot. And when you look at the grade card, basically, and look at the data on Buffalo, and then you watch the video, you see, wow, there's a lot of Chiefs to these guys. Josh Allen has made a meteoric rise. And he's been helped by a couple of things. One, the system. He's been more ingrained in the system. And, yes, Brian Daboll's helped him. But I think Stephon Diggs' emergence as a Tyreek Hill kind of, I'm not only a nine-route fast dude, I'll run every route on the tree, and I'll run that same quick twitch route that that Tyreek ran to win the game on Sunday. Once that happened, now Josh Allen has got a go-to guy. He can light him up and target him and target him and target him. And with the maturation of Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen's ability to heave at 70 yards like Mahomes or take off Mahomes and take off and run, I think that's been the big difference between the Bills of October that the Chiefs faced and the Bills of January that they'll face on Sunday. If you look at Diggs' targets, 166 targets this year in the regular season. That was number one in the league. That's basically 10 targets a game. And then 127 receptions. And most of those targets were in the last eight games of the year. They got it going on. This is a Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, the Kelsey thing. This is Peyton Manning to Marvin Harrison thing. And it's very, very dangerous and profitable for the Bills.
Well, I'm thrilled to be watching a third consecutive AFC championship game being played at Arrowhead, which is pretty astounding. And if you would have told me that, what, 3 or 4 years ago, I would not have believed you in 100 years. So enjoy it, Mitch.
I am, in fact. And, you know, my minute with Mitch, I know you listen to every week and watch on WIVW Channel 13, take copious notes. Think about this, because I brought this up. It's a big deal to host the championship game, not only try to win and get to the Super Bowl, but it puts your community on center stage. People are moving here now. They're like, oh, this would be kind of a cool place to live. Arrowhead Stadium has become a bucket list place. But think about this. The Steelers and the Patriots combined have played in 31 AFC championship games. And never have either one of those teams hosted this game 3 years in a row like the Chiefs have. That's kind of mind-blowing to me.
It is. It is. Mitch, thank you so much for the time, as always. Best of luck on the call, and hopefully we are talking to you before another Super Bowl, my friend.
You got it, my friend. And people want to know, is he ready at Monday at 2, Tuesday at 5, I mean Wednesday at 9, You're going to know when you know, but you cannot skip hurdles in this process. And that's why the Chiefs can't say he's cleared and ready to go. May not be until Friday, maybe Saturday.
All right. Fingers crossed.
All right.
Take care, Mitch.
See you, bud.
There's Mitch Holtis. Mitch Fortner, how do you want to handle this? Do you want to break and get to number one song? Do we have time, or do you want to go straight to it? Okay, number one song of the day coming up next.
From 1984, Owner of a Lonely Heart by Yes. 2 weeks at number one. You
always live your life. What year?
84. One of your favorite years. Yes is one of the most successful, influential, and longest-lasting prog rock bands. They've sold over 13.5 million records worldwide. Actually, that's just in the United States, beg your pardon. They were ranked the number 94 band on VH1's 100 Greatest Artists of Hard Rock.
So this is prog rock? You consider this to be prog rock?
Prog rock is it's a broad term. I mean, it's not your old traditional pop rock, like Beatles. It is a different sound. Prog rock is basically just a different sound from the traditional. Pink Floyd is a really good example.
I always just thought of it as more like, yeah, I mean, I get that makes sense. I always thought of it as like rock artists that are producing like super long songs, you know, like 6-7 minute long songs.
Well, Yes, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2017, 21 studio albums. 5 top 40s, this is their only number one. From the album 90125, it's their 11th studio album, best-selling, sold over 3 million copies in the United States. This song is simple. It describes the paradox of loneliness. Once you've been hurt, loneliness is better than a broken heart. Boy, who can say they've been there?
Once you've been hurt, loneliness is better than a broken heart?
Yeah. So the big story about this is believed to be the first rock song to use a sample. So what a sample is basically is you take somebody else's song, like the sound of their song, and put it into yours. It's very popular in rap and hip hop, but it's not as much as you would think. The drum, which you just kind of heard right there, break at the beginning, and the horn stab you're hearing a lot right there. Was used in the 1971 song Cool Is Back by Funk Inc. But this song has also been sampled by Michael Jackson, Enrique Iglesias, and Frank Zappa. So there you go, just kind of passing it around.
Do we have a story about whoever it was that sent this guy into a tailspin to create this song? Who's the woman behind the song?
There's no woman. I looked with a fine-tooth comb to find a woman.
Well, you don't know that. Maybe this guy just hasn't told everybody.
The record company was just looking for a hit, and they put together a hit.
Wow, you're just calling this guy out for being shallow and playing for the radio, huh?
Yeah, because the 10 records prior to this, Yes, did have a different sound. It was very unique. It was more prog rock, and then their 11th studio album comes out, and they have a more modern sound. Like, they're going for a hit, and that's exactly what they did. In 84, this song reached number 8 on the year-end chart in the United States.
Okay. Well,
We play this on K-Rock. It just doesn't feel like a K-Rock song.
Yeah, no, it doesn't at all. I'm surprised to hear that you do play it on K-Rock.
It's a bit disappointing.
Like, it feels like it's on the periphery of what a K-Rock song would be. Like, I can't imagine, you know, somebody at bike night being excited to listen to Owner of a Lonely Heart. Is that the target demo, like a bike night crowd?
Yeah, sometimes. The Working Man.
The Working Man. All right, The Working Man, yeah. Listen, the excuses for these basketball performances are starting to wear thin on me.